This podcast is brought to you by the Village of Bedford Park, your home for business. Over 450 businesses strong and growing with a safe, reliable Lake Michigan water supply. Visit VOBPbiz.com and bring your business home to the Village of Bedford Park.
This is Chicago's all-news station, News Radio 780 and 105.9 FM. Now, the WBBM Noon Business Hour.
WBBM News Time, 12:03. Great to have you with us for the Wednesday edition of the Noon Business Hour. I'm Cisco Cotto. On today's Noon Business Hour, we'll get into all of that and also the price of oil. It is up more than 4% today. We will find out why in our next segment. Right now, we're putting the spotlight on the economy. We welcome Ed Wehmer, President and CEO of Wintrust here in Chicago. Ed, good to have you back on the program here. What are you seeing, I guess, trend-wise in the wider economy? Anything that concerns you, or are you feeling pretty positive?
I'm feeling pretty positive, Cisco. It's barring, you know, the headwinds in Illinois, the economy isn't going to get much better with, you know, good GDP growth, wages up 5.2%, rates as low as they are. Talk of recession, I think, is just fear. It's we might talk ourselves into one, but I don't think you can put full employment and in the same terms as in the same phrases of recession is coming.
Almost seems like there's some scaredy cats, right? Because you're right in that they keep talking about a recession, even though it doesn't look like there's genuinely one on the horizon. It seems like it's all right.
It is all right. You know, everybody's worried about trade. You saw the market go yesterday on China. Interesting thing to think about trade is, if you look at total trade, it's up 16%. That's ins and outs, up 16% to $5.7 trillion in the trailing 12 months. Supply chains are very nimble. Vietnam is up. China's down 12.3%, but Vietnam is up 33%. Taiwan's up 20%. Korea up 10%. India up 10%. Mexico up 6.3%. So trade is still going on. It could be better if China was, they could get that fixed, but it's still pretty darn good.
Yeah, I'm glad you brought that up, because that's one of the things that's been really interesting to me to watch how nimble we have all these different companies, where they can say, okay, things aren't really advantageous here. That's all right. There's plenty of other countries we can move our manufacturing to.
That's correct. And eventually they had to deal with the China issue, and it's going to be somewhat painful. It's hard on agriculture more than anything else. But, you know, the government did step up with subsidies to help the farmers. The farmers seem to be very stoic Americans. They know in the long term it's going to work out, and the government was wise to step up and help the industry, although there's still some stress there. But, you know, it's only going to get better, and I think a China deal will be forthcoming, which will only make things better. So, again, you've never seen rates this low, no inflation, wages going up, consumers feeling pretty good. A lot of naysayers out there, but I think that they're off base.
You talked about headwinds here in Illinois. Talk about that a little bit. What are some of the challenges in order for us to keep this Illinois economy going?
Well, it's obviously the problems that we have in our government finances, both the city of Chicago and the state. We're not dealing with the structural issues that need to be dealt with. The tax issue that's coming up is going to be very interesting to watch. But if you run the numbers, there's no way that there's no way that taxing just the rich people is going to get them anywhere even close to where they need to be. Given the Springfield, a blank check to raise taxes is going to be very hard on this on the city and the state. You know, what's interesting too is that the housing market here is so poor, and really to have 2 to 2.5% GDP growth nationally without housing kicking in is almost unprecedented. So, but Illinois and Chicago got to get their act together. And that's going to involve some structural changes, but they're going to drive people out. And we see it already, drive businesses and people out, and then there will be no cow left to milk.
Yeah, great insight. Thank you very much. Always good to have you on the show. Ed Wehmer, President and CEO of Wintrust here in Chicago. Oil, the big winner today. It is up 4.33%. Let's find out what's going on. Phil Flynn, Senior Market Analyst at Price Group, also a Fox Business News contributor based here in Chicago. Phil, more than 4% is the growth on oil today. What's going on?
We're crashing up. You know, it's amazing, of course.
It's I call it Black and Blue Friday, Cisco. That's what happened the day after Thanksgiving in the oil market. A lot of the traders aren't there. They're at home trying to, you know, get over their turkey hangovers. And all of a sudden, if you remember, the price of oil collapsed. I mean, we're down 5% in a day, and it was driven by a lot of what I call fake headlines. You know, there was talk that OPEC and Russia weren't going to get along and that there was going to be no production cut. You know, then, of course, you had rumors that the U.S.-China trade deal was going to fall apart. So you had all these things that were driving these prices down. What happens a couple of days later? People get actual data on supply and demand, which we saw from the Department of Energy that showed a big drawdown in crude supplies. And now we're hearing a lot of talk that not only will OPEC extend their production cuts along with their co-conspirator Russia, the OPEC plus one, which is Russia, but also the possibility that they're engineering an even bigger production cut. You put it all together, not only did we wipe out all the losses that we saw on Black and Blue Thursday, now we're getting more optimistic that we could see even better demand going forward with tighter supplies, and that really turned this market around.
You know, with this commodity oil, it seems like it's really tough to in any way think about the long term, because any little thing can really send it up or down by several percent.
It is. It's been unbelievable. And I think the price of oil is more sensitive to headlines than it ever has been before. I think part of the problem is we get the headlines so quickly. You know, they come fast and furious. You get computers that react to these headlines. And, you know, sometimes the computers, you know, don't think about the bigger picture. You know, they react to the headline and they move. And I think that was a perfect example of what we saw here the last couple of days. The big picture is right now is that the global oil market is looking pretty darn good. The U.S. economy is doing great. The Chinese economy seems to be bouncing back. We got strong manufacturing data. And there's even a lot of talk that we're going to see a lot of improving demand in India. So a lot of people earlier in the year on oil was, you know, kind of saying, hey, the global economy is slowing down. The U.S. is going to go into a recession. Demand's going to be lousy. That didn't happen. And now as we come into the new year, economic prospects are brightening, the demand expectations are rising, and we might go from a market that was worried about a glut, you know, a few months ago, to a market that's going to be worried about tight supplies in just a few months.
Good analysis, as always. Thank you, Phil Flynn, Senior Market Analyst at Price Group here in Chicago. Oil today really rising. It is up right about 4.25%. It is back solidly into the $58 range. Up next, making sure you're not hurting yourself by hoarding credit card points.
Because money matters. This is the WBBM Noon Business Hour.
Credit card rewards can be a valuable commodity if you use them correctly. Let's get some advice from Ted Rossman, industry analyst at creditcards.com based in New York. Ted, for starters, I know a lot of people, they hoard these rewards, whether it's cash or miles or points, whatever it is, thinking maybe later on they'll have some kind of a big purchase. Is that wise to really gather these things for a long period of time?
It's not good to hoard these. You may feel like it's a great idea to be a points millionaire, but there's a risk to that. Airlines and hotels often devalue their programs, basically meaning that they require more points or miles to get that same free flight or free hotel stay. So it's better to use those sooner rather than later. And with cash back, there's really no incentive at all to hold on to it. Use it while you can.
So it seems like people almost treat those like sort of savings accounts where they just collect them to use later, but there's diminishing returns.
There's diminishing returns. There's also the expiration policies. We found in a recent study that about half of Americans who participate in airline and hotel rewards programs have let those points or miles expire at some point. Usually 12 to 24 months of inactivity will cost you your points. For credit card rewards, 30% have allowed those to expire. It's not as common there, but you still don't want to lose out on that value.
Talk about dynamic pricing, where airlines make changes, and that impacts what your points are worth.
Yeah, this has really become the norm lately on airlines like United and Delta and others, where they may say no blackout dates, but you're going to pay a lot more in terms of your points or miles to fly during peak times, such as the holidays or spring break. You can get good value from those points and miles at those times of year. But just know that it's going to cost you a lot more than if you travel off-peak. This is one of those sneaky devaluations that we talk about. Usually these points and miles will not get more valuable over time.
And when you get out a new credit card, you take it out and they offer you all kinds of miles, 75,000, 100,000, you know, however many miles they offer you. It seems like a great deal, but because of those changes and because of dynamic pricing, it's maybe not as big of a deal as it looks.
And this contributes to the devaluations because there's actually a flood of points and miles on the market right now. The economy is doing well. People are spending. Businesses are sending their employees out on the road. There's a lot of points and miles in the system. And that's part of the reason why we see the devaluations, because these are basically currencies worth whatever the airlines and hotels and credit card companies want them to be, so they can make moves to essentially devalue their own currencies. As consumers, we should use them whenever it makes sense. Cash back, I like to redeem every month or two. For a trip, think about a specific trip in mind. Maybe you want to save 120,000 points for that fantastic business class flight to Europe or Asia. But anything beyond that, you might be leaving value on the table.
Yeah, but it sounds like they could at any time turn that into a 240,000-mile trip.
They could, and that's the risk. So if you don't have a trip on the horizon, then maybe you do want to cash in for something cheaper, like maybe you're planning a domestic trip that, while it may not be quite as expensive, it might be a good use of your points or miles. I really like cash back programs because it's free money. You get it in return for your everyday spending, and even that 2 or 3% back will add up over time. Around the holidays, cash it in, use it for gifts. You can actually redeem for gift cards. Chase and Wells Fargo are running promotions now, giving $100 gift cards for $90 worth of points. Look into that if you're so inclined.
Thanks so much, Ted Rossman, industry analyst at creditcards.com. This is the time of year for office holiday parties. We'll discuss ways to keep the annual event from becoming a career killer. As you look for gifts this holiday season, you may want to consider giving an investment. We'll get some suggestions in Personal Finance Wednesday. Legal scholars debate whether President Trump's actions warrant impeachment. That's going on at a hearing on Capitol Hill. Some aldermen want to delay sales of recreational marijuana in Chicago. WBBM Business, the Dow up 198 points. The NASDAQ is up 49. The S&P is up 21. Heading to a high of 42. Right now we're already at 41, so we're just about there. And the sunshine is going to be here all day long. It's 40 at O'Hare, 41 Midway, and it's 39 degrees along Chicago's lakefront. The Noon Business Hour is presented by the Village of Bedford Park. Markets are rallying today. Let's find out what's going on. We're joined by Paul Nolte, portfolio manager at Kingsview Asset Management here in Chicago. Paul, what do you see? What's going on today?
Well, you may have heard, I think the trade is still on with China after some rumblings early yesterday that maybe we'll wait until after the election for the next go-round with China. So it's trade that's really been driving the markets. And I think for investors, you can't get too terribly excited about the latest trade news one way or the other, because it looks as though, at least over the last 3 days, that the trading, most of the gains or losses have occurred within the first half hour to hour worth of trading. And then after that, the markets have been trading sideways. So it really doesn't make sense to trade, buy or sell right at the open based on whatever the news of the morning might be.
Yeah, I'm glad you pointed that out, because that's what I was noticing yesterday. You had the market, you know, down right about 400, and it sort of hovered at that point throughout most of the day.
Yeah, it did. And it finished up a little bit better. And then, you know, this morning on the news that, you know, maybe we're still talking with China, the markets rallied 200 points and we're essentially there. So, again, to make that decision that, oh, my gosh, the trade talks are still on, let's hurry up and buy. You're essentially buying at prices right now. You're not getting in at low prices. You would have had to do that yesterday. So, again, not following the news, but following more a longer-term investment strategy makes a lot more sense when you get news items like this that really kind of jerk the market around.
But that adrenaline rush that you get, right, from the up and down and paying attention to tweets and different things going on in the news is just so much more fun than actually paying attention to the fundamentals and investing that way.
You get old quick that way. And so I think really when you have to take a look at it, you do want to take a look a little longer term. And some of the economic data that we've gotten over the last week or two, and we get some big data Friday on the unemployment numbers, are indicating that the U.S. is still slowing, not recessionary, not contraction, but slowing. And so I think that is going to have some impact on earnings as we get through and into 2020, and may cap the stock prices. Part of the reason why stocks, if you look back over the last 13, 14 months or so, they're up, but they're only up about 3 to 5%, even though they've come up a long way from a year ago Christmas.
So if the economy is slowing, and is it time to start rebalancing, changing things around, looking at that portfolio? And if so, what should we do?
No, absolutely. You want to take these opportunities when markets are making all-time highs to shave your equity holdings, get back to, you know, whatever that long-term allocation is, whether it's a 50-50 or whatever. Sell some stocks in here, buy some bonds in here, and rebalance the portfolio, because you don't want to have a portfolio that's overweighted in the equity side, and then we see a market that goes down 10, 20% because of whatever recession may show up, and then you're looked you're not happy with the results of that. So it takes some time to do it. Usually a couple times a year is really all that's required, depending on how the markets move.
What sectors you're looking at these days, positively, you might advise people about?
And one of the areas that's really been kind of beaten down and has kind of come to life recently, at least, has been healthcare. And, you know, certainly that's in the crosshairs, depending upon which political party is gaining ground for the elections. But that's one area that's been beaten down a lot and has been coming back here recently. And now that the yield curve is a little bit more steeper and no longer negative and no longer inverted, the financials, the money center banks look pretty good here. I think they can do pretty well with positive spreads.
And that's even in spite of this interest rate environment?
I think so. You know, really what it's going to mean for banks is, as long as the yield curve is positively slope, meaning that lower or short-term interest rates are lower than long-term rates, banks make money on that spread. It's when the yield curve gets inverted and short-term rates are above long-term rates that banks really struggle. So back to a more normal yield curve certainly will help out the banking sector.
Any insight on dividend stocks? Is that something that you'd advise if there's a slowing economy? And a sort of a two-part question, is there a chance that maybe dividends are impacted if earnings growth is slowing?
To a certain extent, we've seen certainly a lot of companies return money to shareholders in the way of dividends. A lot of companies have been instituting dividends, increasing dividends, and certainly stock buybacks. And all of those have generally been a good prop for stocks and have put a floor underneath a lot of market declines. So we do like companies that do pay a dividend. We like it that more where companies are paying a dividend but not a huge amount of the earnings. So that payout ratio is something less than 50%. So that means that if earnings come down a little bit, they're still able to maintain that dividend and also increase it going forward.
Thanks so much. Always appreciate your analysis. Paul Nolte, Portfolio Manager at Kingsview Asset Management here in Chicago. Up next, it's Personal Finance Wednesday, giving the gift of investments this holiday season.
Cashing in with conversation. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
It's Personal Finance Wednesday on the Noon Business Hour. This afternoon, we are helping you with Christmas shopping. We welcome Craig Bolanos, founding partner and chief executive officer at Wealth Management Group in Inverness and Downers Grove. Craig, I'm going to guess that this isn't a sort of a bunch of toys that you have collected that we should be buying for our children.
You are spot on. Now, Cisco, there's nothing wrong with a little bit of what I call mass consumerism under the guise of gift giving, but why not make it a bold move this year? And instead of just some good old-fashioned materialistic cheer, how about we give people some empowerment, some education via an investment? So the first thing I was thinking about is there are so many fantastic books that we could give our loved ones, whether it be about investing, managing money, resetting your finances, and that could really change their life going into 2020. Oh. So I think we should give a book.
So you give a book. Now, here's what I, because you got some more insight, and I want to get that and get your advice. But how do you do this in a way that is exciting, that the young people like it, and it's not the equivalent of socks and underwear?
Ah, fantastic. Well, how about this? How about we pair that book that we can get for $10 or $15? How about we pair it with actually an actionable item? So why don't we go ahead and help that loved one open up a custodial account or open up a 529 plan, which we could do with as little as $100 to $200, and now they can take that book and turn it into action as they watch their money get invested.
Yeah, and then it's sort of a long-term thing where you can keep coming back to it over and over again.
Absolutely. It becomes a repeatable experience and something that you can share with that young person in your life. I think it's a big deal. But all of us don't just have young kids or don't just have grandkids. A lot of us have adult children. And I think something else we talk about with people is, you know, this can be done in another way. Maybe you have a young family. Maybe you've just been blessed with a grandchild for the first time. It might make an awful lot of sense to pay for an hour or two of time for your adult child to sit down with a certified financial planner, to sit down with an estate attorney, to kind of get their affairs in order. And I think as long as you message correctly, which is, son, daughter, this is something we, mom and dad, value, this is something we've done, I just want to help nudge you into the opportunity, I think the message is well received.
Is it appropriate for an adult child to pay for their parents to go to an estate planner, or does that seem a little self-serving?
Well, you know what? That might seem like a little self-serving. And there's an interesting, there's that role reversal that happens. But here's what I do want to say. I want to go on record saying this. If anybody is caring for an aging parent, I mean, it's a deeper discussion. If you're caring for an aging parent and you're getting to that point that you're worried the affairs aren't in order, I think it would be appropriate to hire someone for mom and dad to make sure that it's good. Because after all, the finances are intertwined between the generations. So it's a good joke, but there's a serious message there, Cisco.
So if we want, let's go back to younger investors. If we want them to really get into it, what's the best way to do that? Certain apps, or do we just open maybe a custodial account or something? I mean, how do we really get them started in actually investing?
No, absolutely. So after we give them the book, then the next spot we're going to go is we're going to open up a custodial account for any of the young kids and let them actually invest. And the best way for them to invest is they're going to put a portion of their money in a low-cost index fund, you know, maybe something that tracks the S&P 500, and then they're going to purchase one stock, something that they can do the homework on, something that they can follow, preferably something they do in their everyday lives.
And there's apps galore, right, to help young people with this?
Oh, there absolutely is. In fact, you know, the young people, I would say, hey, I want to help you start getting invested, and I want you to choose an app, or I want you to choose a program that you feel comfortable, because there's a lot of great platforms for the kids to start their investing. And given they're on their phones every single day of the week, 24 hours a day, why not make sure the investment portal runs through that same phone? I think it's going to lead to success.
Yeah, then they can have fun following it all the time. Good stuff. Thank you, Craig Bolanos, founding partner, chief executive officer, Wealth Management Group in Inverness in Downers Grove. That's Personal Finance Wednesday. This time tomorrow, Technology Thursday, still to come. Making sure your holiday office party doesn't turn into a professional disaster.
It's 60 Minutes of Financial Planning. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
It can sometimes be a fine line between fun and complete, utter humiliation. Let's discuss holiday office party behavior. Tom Gimbel is joining us, founder and CEO of the staffing and recruiting firm LaSalle Network in Chicago. Tom, that's really a fair way to describe it, right? You can have fun or you might completely ruin your career.
Well, I think, Cisco, I think it really comes down to judgment and how people approach life. You shouldn't be a totally different person the night of the holiday party than you are the other 364 days of the year. And if you're a nightmare all those other times when you have a couple cocktails, then it's probably par for the course. But if you handle your that night the same way you handle the rest of your life, everything should be just fine.
Yeah, a lot of people go into it. There's something psychologically just sort of different. Hey, we're partying. It's after hours. We're hanging out. And they forget that these are their coworkers and their bosses.
Yeah, it really comes down to how you approach life. There's nothing wrong with having cocktails. Quite frankly, there's nothing wrong with getting drunk with coworkers. There is a problem if you don't know the limit of controlling it, where your behavior changes. And if it makes you be, whether you're female or male, that you become more flirtatious or more, that's inappropriate. And you should know if you're that way outside of work and outside of the holiday party. And just don't, it doesn't mean you shouldn't go have fun or participate. It means you should know your limits 365 days of the year.
Should you also know, how do I say this, what kind of a drunk you are? What happens to you when you start drinking, and really navigate that?
Yes. Yes, and quite frankly, not that I'm anybody's life coach or health instructor, but you should know for that, for no matter where you are, whether it's drinking and driving or at a social interaction or familial, that if you have too much of this or doing shots or drinking wine or how liquor affects you, and then you should know your limits. But you should have a ton of fun, and you shouldn't be afraid to go to a cocktail party or a holiday party or a happy hour with your coworkers. You should actually enjoy them and want to have a few drinks with them and enjoy each other's company.
Do you have to think about how you dress at a holiday party? Do you just dress like you do when you're heading out for the night?
No, if you're new to the company, you should definitely ask people who've been around for 5, 6, 7 years and ask them what's the appropriate attire. It's not the time to stick out and either be too casual or, quite frankly, to be too overdressed. You want to fit in, especially in your first year or two, and make sure that you're dressed appropriately. And it's not the time to push the envelope of try to act like you're going to a black tie affair or that you're going to a local grunge fest concert.
So our producer here tells us your big holiday party is tonight. Be honest with us. You got a couple of employees. You're not quite sure they'll still be with you tomorrow?
No, I'm fairly confident. We've been doing an annual holiday party. We do something a little bit different, Cisco. We include our clients at our holiday party. So we'll end up having about 700 clients and then 200 of our folks all together, and we do it together. And going on about 10 years of doing this, we haven't had any problems.
Yeah, it's easier to cart out the ones that you need to get rid of when there's a lot of people there. It's pretty good.
Well, we always do it on the second floor. We can just kick them out the window.
That's a good plan. Unfortunately, my boss is listening to that now. Thank you, Tom Gimbel, founder, CEO of the LaSalle Network here in Chicago.
Oh, such a clutch pickup, Dave.
I know, right? I was worried we'd bring back the same team.
Oh, no, I meant those blackout motorized shades. MVP of the room.
Blinds.com made it crazy affordable to replace our old blinds.
Hard to install?
No, it's easy. Even you could do it.
Nice.
I installed these and then got some for my mom, too.
What, you fly across the country to do the install?
Nope. Blinds.com can do it all. All she had to do was pick what she wanted. She talked to a design consultant for free and scheduled a professional measure and install.
Look at you, Hall of Fame son.
Oh, I just picked the winning team. They're the number one online retailer of custom window coverings in the world.
Oh, Blinds.com is the GOAT.
The GOAT.
He shoots. He scores.
Go to Blinds.com for up to 45% off and a 100% satisfaction guarantee. Go right now for up to 45% off at Blinds.com. Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.